That's trombonist Delfeo Marsalis, one of the venerated Marsalis family on trombone, and Monty Alexander from Jamaica, jazz pianist, and they teamed up together on this one titled Concrete Jungle. Oh, sorry, No More Trouble from the album Concrete Jungle. This is a Bob Marley tune. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're starting 7 minutes late today. I don't like it. But sometimes we have to accommodate each other because sometimes you run a program and you just can't end it. I understand. I understand. But let's get started. We are in the midst of looking at stories that deserve entirely different analyses. The headlines are running over us these days, but not so much the explanations behind the headlines. We're not understanding the news. We're not getting an appreciation of the hidden stories behind the news. So this is what we are going to do today as well. We started it yesterday, and we'll take a look at some of the major stories that you would think we would have chapter and verse on, but it's not working out that way. And we have to encourage ourselves to do it because we have become conditioned. We are conditioned to wait for media outlets to tell us what the news is, even though they're not telling us what the news is. We have to condition ourselves to rely on ourselves, our own intuition, our own knowledge, our own research, to get a more a fuller understanding of the news, which is one thing, but to get an appreciation of the practicality of it in our lives. I mean, take for example today. We have all kinds of things going on today, except when you check it, I mean, closely, the country is in nobody's hands today. We're on our own today. The president is ducking accountability at home. He suddenly has found himself in meetings. And of course, you'd say this is a very important meeting. So, in as much as Kim Jong-un has made himself available to discuss serious matters with the United States on a bilateral basis, sure, you would want to be available for discussions like that. But when you look at the other side of the thing, the president of the country is not in the country, and supposedly he's tending to matters more important. At the same time, his vice president is stoking the flames of war in Colombia, which is, of course, right on the border of Venezuela. And telling people that the United States is 100% behind the opposition and visiting this region at a time when it is so critical to tamper down, to bring the level of saber rattling down. So, who's running the country while these two are involved in things that we didn't ask them to do? And they have no real reason for doing it, especially in Venezuela. What is the reason that the vice president of the United States has to be, has to be at this time in the region choreographing the what they hope will be and what they plan to be an eventual invasion of Venezuela and the installation of some upstart who thinks, and this mirrors Trump's attitude exactly. The country had elections, a president was elected, but he does not please people. The outcome of the election, therefore, absolutely has to be voided. And they want somebody they like. Whether the process is legal or not, whether they are essentially overtaking the responsibilities of the people and the Constitution and all of that. President Trump says, I don't like this guy. He's got to go, and I'm going to see to it that he goes. Why is the US interfering in a sovereign country's internal affairs? And now to the point of making it plain that the United States will go to war over this with one specific agenda item, which is to defeat the democratically elected president, install the person that they like, create all kinds of havoc in the country, and put their hands on all that oil, one of the largest, if not the largest, oil reserves in the world. And the people of the United States are okay with that. So, what are your thoughts? Not just about this particular story, we have other stories at play. This is today that we have some serious action occurring before the House Intelligence Committee. The president's former lawyer and legal advisor is to come before the committee and tell what he knows about Trump's highly irregular and illegal ways of doing things. What that would amount to, we don't know. Whether this would result in additional action, we don't know. So we'll see. 888-874-4888. Let's get started, and we can begin to make some sense of headlines here. The idea is to encourage a different level of thought. It is not that this person did this and that person did that. We have to now, and we should always, begin the process of putting things together, synthesizing information, so that we have a far fuller picture and we become more difficult for the powers that be to tell us what they want to tell us, to shape our minds according to their will. We absolutely must fight back. And to do that intelligently, we have to have an entirely different mindset. We talked yesterday. And we were right on target when we talked about the Catholic Church preparing this massive convocation at the Vatican, supposedly to examine the impact of child abuse and sexual abuse generally. And exactly, we wrote the script. We wrote the script. We predicted exactly what was going to happen, and it did. Which means that if these authorities and powers believe that they're so smart, well, we have proof all the time that we are, at the least, just as smart and even smarter. All right, 888-874-4888. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. So we have to make up for lost time. So tell us
Yeah,
what's on your mind.
I'm going to be quick. Refers to Bernie Sanders, who says
Okay.
he's going to run for president as an independent. Am I correct in that?
Well, we don't quite know, but I think that's the general gist of things. But he hasn't, I mean, I haven't read it where he has been explicit about it.
I think we all have a lack of critical thinking, and we're not really paying close attention to what's really going on here. We're given a lot of information, and it's a lot of wrong information. But it seems to me, if Bernie Sanders ran in 2016 against one candidate, Hillary Clinton, and he almost beat her, why wouldn't he be running as a Democratic party with all these other people are going to be running? And since he had so many people following him in the last election, I think he would be a shoo-in to win the Democratic Party. And then it would
At
set
this
up a two,
point,
that
I
would
think
set up a
it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of ancillary. It is not
Well,
germane to what the people really want to know about Bernie Sanders. It is really, I mean, when you boil it down, it is really not important whether Bernie wants to run as an independent or as a socialist or as a democratic socialist or as a Democrat. The fact is, if you have a rapport, and it's been demonstrated he has a rapport, he has some currency with the people, what you want to run as is not nearly as important as what you want to run for. So we are enmeshed, it seems to me, and it is a superfluous question.
Well,
You either want, you know what I mean?
I'm trying to make a point where I'm trying to show that Bernie Sanders really doesn't want to be the president, and he's just doing this. See, when he ran with Hillary, he had a chance to like object about some things because she had super delegates and all this stuff. And now here's his chance to run and get the Democratic nomination. And then make a two-horse race between him and Trump. Instead, he's choosing to be an independent, which is going to set up a three-horse race, and he's going to take votes from the Democratic Party and the Green Party, and Trump's going to end up winning a very close race, but he's going to get in again for 4 more years, thanks to Bernie Sanders' stupid decision to run as an independent instead of
I don't
running
think
as a
it's a stupid
Democrat.
decision at all. I don't think it's a stupid decision, and we have to respect his right to run as
But if you're
whatever
not letting
candidate
me
he chooses to
explain,
run. It's not a
Democrat, and he
stupid decision. It's just one that you probably don't agree with, but that doesn't make it a stupid decision. He is running within the context of what his political history is. He's already raised $10 million. Does not suggest he's stupid. It suggests that there are a lot of people who are interested in him as a candidate. It doesn't matter what kind of candidate at this point. If he chooses to run as a Democrat, he chooses to run as an independent. The fact is, when in a couple of days you raise $10 million from people who are sensible, they're very smart, they're very discerning, and they figure, well, he's the best guy so far. And they put their currency with him. So we have to respect that. We really have to do a bit of growing up on our political decisions. We cannot dictate what people should do. We can only critique what they do or have done, but we can't t say that, well, because he's running and he chooses to run in a particular fashion, that he's stupid. Far from it. Thanks for calling in. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good to get through today. Greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
I want to reference again the March Atlantic article. I hope the full piece is online. I know at least some of it is. But he actually puts, he actually explains a history and why some Democrats are gun shy, as it were, and but why that's the only solution, even if he's not convicted and removed in the Senate. He also edifies that Brad Sherman, a representative from California, was actually the first one to file a impeachment article or articles. Then there was somebody else, and then Al Green, the brother, he was the third one. I believe 20-some or so have signed on. We also heard the sister in that forum, what the new freshman, I can't remember her name now, but she spoke up rather heartily, if you will. The other point I want to make is that...
But wait a minute. I'm not clear what it is, what your point is. So,
well, there was some talk about impeachment recently, and so I wanted to reference an excellent article on in the Atlantic, the March issue, but also at least some of it online. He really does give a good argument why the the Democrats should move forward, and hopefully that they are around their hearings. And hopefully tomorrow there's a big public hearing with, what's his name, Michael Cohen. So that should be rather intriguing. But there haven't been actually public hearings around Trump and his incompetence and behavior and his being a witting or unwitting Russian asset. So hopefully now that the Democrats control the House, that's something we'll see. But the main point that I wanted to make is we need to think about what happened at Nuremberg. The Nuremberg Tribunal, even if you only saw that movie, I believe it was with Spencer Tracy, et cetera, I think we're at a point now where we need to think about that type of a situation happened in America, and I reference some recent information that's come out.
You're talking, but I'm not sure that you're guiding us to a certain point in your argument.
Well, I mentioned the Nuremberg Tribunal. I mentioned that because what's happening on the southern border, like the people that they had in Guantanamo, instead of giving them an ankle bracelet and a lot of them actually have people in the country, but it's recently come out that there being a number, about 90 of them in those awful internment camps, are being force-fed. In addition, it's recently come out, I had heard that there were over 10,000.
No. When you call in, the assumption is that you have something definitive to say. You're all over the place. And we're still not knowing what is your essential point is. So could you, in this moment, consolidate your thoughts, tell us what it is that we expect to hear as an argument about something, and where you're going?
Well, I brought up the Nuremberg tribunals that happened in Germany. You're familiar with that, right, Utrecht? And
yes.
What I'm saying is there are things that are going on right now under this guy Trump that makes me feel that these are Nuremberg-level crimes. So, for an example, when Sessions left when he was fired, before he left, he shut down the system of consent decrees, which to me has all kind of ramifications. We know what they found in Ferguson around the revenue stream against black people and infractions. And I'm also referencing that according to hearing Tom Hartman on PRN early morning, is that there are 47,000 families that have been split up. The government in court filings takes a position that, well, you know, we didn't really document to match people, and it's so bad that they're saying, well, after some months or a year, that it would be traumatic for them to leave the foster families as opposed to being with
all
their
right,
mothers
so
and
you've
fathers.
You've packed a lot of unrelated things together, but they're not gelling into a theme or a central point that you're making. You keep losing us all the time, and you're going from pillar to post, and you're carrying us with you. I'm confused as to what is it that you intended to communicate. What is your central point?
My central point is that if we think about the crimes against humanity, against human rights that's going on in this present administration, that I'm thinking about whether there will be some sort of account, or I look at it in terms of the Nuremberg trial and what I saw in terms of the deprivations, et cetera. I mean, Hitler started with internment camps.
See, you're off again on a whole other tangent. First, you put us in the era of the Nuremberg trials, which were specific to something having to do with the conduct of the state against citizens. And then you're jumping all over the place, and we have, I mean, you're not doing a good job today, Ma'at, of congealing your thoughts so that we can follow you in, you know, a streamlined way. Right now, I'm totally confused as to what it is that you intended to do to bring our attention to. We are in modern times. You start off at the Nuremberg trials. I understand that history has a way of repeating itself, and therefore we can reference, as you say, we can go back to certain points in history that would remind us of the situation that we're in now. But I'm not understanding the logic of your presentation today. So maybe you should take a look at that. What I really, because you're a well-read person, you have a lot of information, but you tend to scatter out. I mean, and we're running all over the place trying to keep up with you, which means we don't have a central theme. We don't know what your point is. We don't know why you're taking us on this grand tour. Because in the end, we can't follow your thought. So maybe this is something you can work on. I think you'd be splendid after you get that done. But in the meantime, I'm confused. So I'll move on today, and we'll come back to you perhaps tomorrow. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's about you?
All right, well, wanted to bring this to the headlines. United States' third largest city is currently going through an election. We have the mayoral election going on with a couple of aldermanic elections going on in the city of Chicago today. The thing is that this election is very unique because there is no real favorite. As I think I explained to you, there are 12 candidates on the ballot right now for mayor of Chicago, ranging from veteran politicians to first-time people who have never run for an office before. So this is an interesting election because of the fact that there is no clear-cut favorite in this mayoral election. There are people who kind of project or predict who might win or who might be in the runoff in April. Obviously, it's a given that there is going to be a runoff because there's nobody in this race who is going to garner the 50% of votes. So obviously there's been predictions on who is going to be the two candidates who are going to go through this runoff. But the more important factor here is this. With the indictment of big-time aldermen like Ed Burke and other politicians, it does seem that the Democratic political machine is weakening right now. And this is a good opportunity for the people of Chicago to at least try to form an opposition to this Democratic machine. I mean, this is probably the most open politically Chicago has been since the Harold Washington days when he ran and won the mayoral seat. But this is an opportunity. And, you know, that's what I can present in this particular election, that it's an opportunity for Chicago to, the people of Chicago, to kind of regain it from the corrupt political machine that has been strongholding this, you know, city for decades.
Well, let's look at that. The city of Chicago has a very notorious reputation as a crooked enterprise, a lot of graft, a lot of underhanded things being done, and it's a tight circle. And if any of the tight circle get, you know, shafted during an election, they just reach out and get the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a sense that people power in Chicago, especially all throughout this process of Chicago's dilemmas and trying to find credible leadership, do you get the sense that people power, in fact, is achievable here?
I think it's very achievable. Like I said, this is very achievable in this particular election. The problem is, I just don't see the people gathering together to kind of say, okay, this is the person that we're going to stand behind. I think, you know, with a lot of confusion here, especially, like I said, with 12 mayoral candidates, I don't think I've ever seen an election where a seat of a big city has 12 people running at the same time. So, and like I said, you have a big hodgepodge of political veterans, but also, you know, people who ran one time and people who a lot of people don't know much about. So it's achievable. I just don't feel like the people were on the same page on who they wanted to support in this particular election.
And that is a function of what, you think?
That's just a function of not being prepared.
Hey, there you go. People are not prepared, and yet they want to go in a particular direction that would demand of them certain skills and experience. They're not prepared to rule. This is a major dilemma in many cities. You have people running who should, they should be in the library for the next 16 years, just learning things. And our political system has been watered down to such a degree that anybody could do it. You go and get anybody willing to do it. And that, by the way, is a plan, part of the plan of confusion that the Democratic Party was successful at for so long. If you pick one of us or you pick one of them, It's the same thing. Both are equally unprepared. Both have problems winning the confidence of the people because they haven't been able to show on a sustained basis that they have what it takes to govern. They have the skills. They have the experience. They know the issues. They know the structure and the substructure and the superstructure of their political system. But people don't want to do that work. And people encourage this nonsense. You know, we talked yesterday about reparations. Nobody suggesting that we should talk about reparations. It's just a slogan to them. They have no clue what is going to be important. What reparations are all about. They have no clue.
Yeah, I said it yesterday. They don't even know what type of reparations they want.
They have no clue. And it's insulting, I think, to the community as a whole that we have people who are given by the silence of others who would not put them in their place, given permission to, you know, play fast and loose with things that are so important, vitally important. And that's one of the eternal insults of this country, with Donald Trump. Here you have a guy who is elected president of the United States. And I'm not trying to just bash him, but the fact is, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see he is barely familiar with the political and economic and social topography of the United States. That's not why he's in office. He has no intention of talking and doing things for the people. It's so clear. But coming back to Chicago, this is the object lesson, and it's unfolding before our eyes. You have a crowded field, you said. There's a crowded field. And yet you, as a Chicagoan, you are at a loss for naming somebody that at least rises to a level to give you confidence in that person's candidacy for mayor. This is outrageous. This is the problem we have. And after Chicago, we can take Detroit as an example. What is the future of Detroit to be when the caliber of leadership is so lacking, generally speaking? People don't feel the need to prepare themselves for leadership.
And you know what, Utrice? And it's so bad because I remember on your show 4 years ago when we talked about this, you had me come on the show talk about the mayoral election in 2015, and I was talking about how Rahm Emanuel was losing his power from that particular election. And I could predict, even if Rahm would have ran now, he wouldn't have been as stronghold of winning this election as some of the other elections that he had. So I was just disappointed that from 4 years ago, somebody should have been planning and saying, hey, let's look at the 2019 election to see where we can get a candidate, where we can support. And that typically hasn't been done. I mean, I have an idea of who I want, you know, I'm going to vote for, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm not too sure that this candidate is going to win because the support of the community is not, you know, not behind this candidate, you know, as I predicted. So, you know, it's our fault.
It's so sad because what you're discussing, what we're discussing, is that politics, in particular, is a thing you have to plan. You can't just jump up and say, hey, elect me. Well, who are you? You know, where does that put the people when we have such a shortage of competent leadership. And that is why I said yesterday, we don't need any more news conferences. We need people to shut up and go in a room and start meeting and start planning. That's what we need. So that you're putting people, you're grooming leadership, and you have a long-term view. The tragedy would be, okay, you have a new mayor, but he has no clue of how the city council works. And he is subject to being bamboozled by special interests and whatnot. We are our own worst enemies, and people have been saying these things for a long time, but nobody's really paying attention to them as being sage advice.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, pay attention to the basics. That's what you need to do. Thanks, Henry. Maybe you should run for mayor someday.
No, I'll be assassinated as soon as I get in the office.
You didn't think I was so mean to you, huh? Daryl from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Eutrice Lee, so glad to speak to you.
Thank you, Daryl.
I want to thank my aunt for bringing up all the crimes against humanity, and I think it would be really interesting if we could find a forum, either domestically or internationally, to tie all the things that my aunt was bringing up. So, for instance, I had sort of forgotten about, rather than the 2,000 or the 3,000 children being separated, 47,000 children separated, and you don't know how many of them have been returned to their families. The piece that she brought up about the current hunger strike, once again, going back to what you just said, how as citizens are you expected to function when you go to the local news? 3 murders, 2 fires, and the latest movie and some news, some weather. You go to the quote unquote national half hour news, Russiagate, the horror of Venezuelan starvation. You get to meet with the new nuclear power on the block. Do you know how long it took the United States to perfect multiple warhead reentry targeting?
Okay, so where are you going?
Point is that the population is totally ignorant of the things that actually affect them. There's an election going on in New York City today for public advocate. Most people don't even know what a public advocate is. I'm not sure that many of the candidates actually understand it. I surely do not. I know its potential. And there are 16 candidates, of which 4 have enough money to maybe reach more than 2 boroughs. So how, if the news media that you depend on to tell you what's happening is focusing on the latest murder, the latest robbery, and not telling you even what a public advocate is, then how are you expected to function?
Well, look, I know this is probably going to irritate you.
No, it isn't.
But,
if it's an answer, I'm buying it.
But here's the thing.
Yes.
It's our job. It's nobody else's job. It's our job. Our ignorance of a political system that rules our lives every single day, that's our responsibility. It's not an excuse to say, well, the media aren't doing their jobs, which means and implies that you expect the media to do the job of educating you. You're so wrong about that. If you could recognize that these things are happening. And then the next logical question would be, well, what are you doing about it? And we get dead silence.
Not here.
Well, that's why I'm saying generally this is where it is.
All right,
this is exactly.
I'll tell you what
so
I'm.
So we get what we get.
You're absolutely correct because when you add in the challenges with regard to hello. When you add in the challenges with regard to food and shelter, obscene oppression, which is also part of what we were talking about, the knowledge of the individual, you're absolutely correct. And when you bring...
I have to ask the other question. How is it that this is not the case for other people?
You mean other countries?
No, I'm talking about other people. Other people know what the advocate is. Other people know how the city council runs. Other people know how to conduct elections. And they're doing it. And they're winning. And that leaves a whole bunch of people. I'm sorry?
Could you be more specific as to where?
Everywhere.
Not in New York.
Everywhere you see that there is such a massive need for people to be educated. Look, I talked about Harlem being sold out already from under the feet of people living in the buildings being sold.
You talked about Crown Heights, and I'm still trying to get people to believe Tawana Brawley.
Well, that's my point. That's not, after a while, you have to say, I have to move on.
But that's the population we're living in. Just to elucidate on the, could you explain just briefly, I don't care what you do, it's your show. I mean, did the Hasidim get some kind of nation recognition from the guy who went to jail as a congressman? He got some legislation. So that they had special rights in the community or something to that effect?
Yes, you're talking about Congressman Fred Richmond, the late congressman, who, by the way, despite everything, was a pretty good congressman. People could go to his office, and I remembered him taking busloads of people, mostly blacks, to Washington to discuss this matter of redlining. So the point I'm making is he was responsive. And yes, Crown Heights, this was at the city council level. It was in the city council that Crown Heights was given, quote, all the rights and privileges of an emerging nation. If you doubt me, go and look it up. It's right there in the books. How does a regular community get the rights and privileges of an emerging nation? Well, they did it. They did it. And so it is a matter of how seriously you take your interests. We have people who insist that it is somebody's job to improve their communities, to safeguard their children in school. I once went to a school and I thought I was going mad. I was going to give a little talk. I could not find the school in Harlem. Why? Because it was under a highway. And when I say under a highway, I mean the distance could not even be 20 feet between the roof of the school and the bottom of the highway. It was right next to the Harlem River, and you have children, and there's no protective barrier between where they are supposed to, quote, play, which was really a gravel yard. Okay? There were no windows. There were no windows in the school. And people were sending their children to school in that school every single day. I thought I was going crazy. Here's what's upsetting. Right on the same block, at the end of the block, was the office of Assemblyman Herman Denny Farrell, the Democratic leader in Harlem. Obliquely across was the office of Al Sharpton. And children are coming to school every day under those conditions. We're kidding. We're playing around. And I would start saying publicly, we have to accept the results of disrespecting ourselves or taking zero interest in our own communities and in our future. That's on us. That's nobody else's fault. So leadership is what you cultivate. One of the most incredible leaders in Harlem at the time was a woman who didn't go to college to learn to organize. I'm talking about Florence Rice. But she was everywhere. And then people started leaving it to her and others like her to figure out how to improve the community. That's not their job. Thanks a lot for calling. Thank you, Daryl. Well, we're pretty much at the end of our program today. We have to continue these discussions to disabuse ourselves of the notion that somebody else is responsible. Of course, somebody else is responsible when you look at it. But the responsibility rests with us. And I'm so over the complaining. I'm so over the people pointing fingers at others and saying, well, look, they're not doing this and they're not doing that, but you're not doing anything. And you're settling for mediocrity. And that only leads, it's a one-way street. Mediocrity would yield the same results every time. Imagine, and I want you to think about that as we part. Imagine an issue that has been relevant since 1619 in this country. And people are talking about it as a kind of, you know, add-on, incidental thing. I'm talking reparations. And we tolerate politicians who clearly are not prepared to offer anything. They haven't studied it. They haven't made it their business to even understand what reparations are, how it works, if it could work. But because they're running for an office, they can, and we allow them to use it in their campaigning, only to signal to a gullible people, oh, they care. They don't care. They don't care. And by allowing them to continue this, as they call it, a conversation. This is not a conversation. Ma'at just mentioned the Nuremberg trials. Was that a conversation? It's not a conversation. It's sanctions. It is making people accountable, even to the point of death, for the crimes that they have committed. So when we join the insult. We add to the insult by giving people all this leeway to treat these matters that are supposed to be very sacred to us as if they're just a topic of conversation. What is the matter with you? Well, that brings us to the end of the program today. Thanks for joining me, and let's talk again tomorrow. We have to look at all these instances in which we are being instructed by these developments in the news to be something else, to do something else, to demand something else. And we think of it as news, but we're so wrong about that. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening.